All right, welcome back everyone to the 11th episode of Aspire, the Leadership Development Podcast, where we will be discussing the visions, inspirations, and experiences from top educational leaders. My name is Joshua Stamper, and you can connect with me on Twitter or on Instagram at Joshua_Stamper. This week, I'm so thrilled to be joined by Jay Billy, author of Lead with Culture, What Really Matters in Our Schools, and an elementary principal in Lawrence Township Public School District. Jay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Josh. I'm excited to do this. I love listening to these Aspire podcasts.
And Jay, as you know, the show is centered on leadership development. I would love to hear your personal leadership journey and how you became an administrator.
Long story short, I think leading by example was always my main go-to thing. A college wrestler, college wrestling coach. I was the captain of my team for a couple of years. Then I became a coach, so I was leading that way. And then when I moved to New Jersey, was a teacher, and it just seemed like I always wanted to do, you know, be involved in everything and be totally immersed in whatever was going on in school. You know, you're teaching class and there's the after school activities going on, so I'd be part of that. And then there'd be things going on at night, and you'd have those people, you know, certain people stay and certain people don't. And I was always just one of the ones going around. The biggest thing about becoming a leader for me was I just really always felt like I was learning as I was going, but I also felt like I could do it better. I felt there wasn't common sense involved in a lot of the leadership decisions I would see made. And I just felt like I could do it better. So when opportunities started arising, I just took them and started as a supervisor, then a vice principal, working with severely emotionally disturbed children at a high school level. I wanted to be the guy that was taking care of things when things were going on. And so that kind of happened. Had the opportunity to move as a principal to an elementary school for students with special needs. Took that on. It was a different type of leadership. I was the leader, but I had to learn to become an instructional leader. There was a lot going on with a lot of kids that I didn't understand or know about. And so I really had to learn as I went. I could steer the ship, but I didn't really understand how it worked. I had to learn that way. Moved over to the public school sector, kind of came from there. I really love being the guy that makes decisions. I love being the guy that is, you know, to use the pirate acronym and the ship. And I love getting the crew all rowing in the same direction. That's the big fun thing for me to do.
And you just wrote a blog post called Congratulations, which was wonderful. Had a great point in there. And I don't want to spoil it for the listeners, but if you get a chance, definitely check out Jay Billy's blog. Congratulations. Part of that blog was the fact that you got to move from one campus to another. Was that your decision or was that?
No, actually, no. I was transferred to a school up the road. I was at one school for 7 years. It was kind of, it was tough. It was, how do you say, bittersweet. It was a compliment. They felt that my skills would benefit this other school up the road that has had some problems and had numerous leaders in it recently. And again, leaving one family to join a new family, the board members and the superintendent were very complimentary in the reasons they wanted me to go. But, you know, it's hard. Change is hard. I most of all, talk to my staff all the time about how change is good. So it was really hard for me to fight too much about it. You know, it was what they needed me to do. So I was ready to do that. But yes, again, the blog post really quickly was, it's just hard when you are moving to a new place, but it wasn't your choice to go. It's the first job I've ever had that I didn't apply for. So when people would come up to me and say, well, congratulations, I didn't know how to react. And that's kind of where that whole thought process came from, because I was leaving the family that I've been with for 7 years, going to a new family, which was great. It wasn't better or different or anything like that. It's just another challenge to take along the way.
Yeah. I want to go back to what you were talking about with your leadership journey. Did you always aspire to be an administrator, or was there a person or a moment that influenced that decision?
I think all along I was headed that way. When I was teaching at the university, I was taking courses for doctoral courses for my administrative certificate at the time. Came up here, taught for a couple of years, and I continued with my coursework. I like to be the guy making decision. I like to, you know, it's good to be king. Not that any of us is ever king, but like I said, you know, having the final say and really be the person to make decisions. Too often I've worked with people who were afraid to make decisions. It's hard to live that way.
So when you transitioned from a teacher to an administrator, what was the biggest surprise to you?
That everybody else wasn't working as hard as I was in the classroom. it was really eye-opening to me. I didn't get that at all. I mean, at the time, I was working with students with severe emotional disturbances. So these are high school kids who are having lots of issues, both psychological, psychiatric, and social emotional home issues. Like I just didn't get it because I was focused on what I was doing in the classroom. I didn't have that big picture, and there were people that weren't doing everything that I was doing, or working as hard as I was working, or cared as much as I cared. Again, I think it, from going from the classroom, I just assumed everybody had the same values that I had. So it was hard to see that. It was also hard to supervise that.
As an administrator, what was the one area you wanted to change in education?
I think that's changed over time. As I said, my first job was working with those really difficult kids. I felt at that time that we weren't doing the right things for them. Looking at it, we needed to change the model of how we were teaching those kids. Now that I'm in the public school and I work at elementary school, I think we need to change the model of what we're looking for and how we teach kids now. I think that there's so much more that we need to do that is not focused on test scores, that's not focused on standardization, to really help our children become contributing members of society, to help them find their passions and use those passions for the good of mankind. Again, I think it's changed over time. I've evolved to really want to make school amazing every day so that our kids are excited to learn and so that they have the opportunity to share the greatness that's in them.
And you talked about the change in education. As education has changed, how have you created a culture of improvement and growth?
I think the biggest part of building that culture is to continually put that in the faces of the people that work with kids. So as a principal, constantly sharing, constantly modeling, risk-taking, out-of-the-box type learning activities, constantly using those things that I see through my professional learning network or that I read in books. Sir Ken Robinson has talked about it for years. Ted Dintersmith's talks about how we can change schools. And there's so much out there, really infusing that into what I believe in and what I talk about every day in schools. I want to make school amazing every day. I want to make learning not the byproduct, but what the goal is. Kids want to come learn. I could care less about the grades. Even with my teachers, I could care less about their scores on their observations. My goal is growth and building that love of learning.
So what are some characteristics that you believe every leader should possess in a similar role?
Risk-taking mindset, where you're not afraid to try things and do things differently. Another thing is to hire people and then let them do their jobs. Give your teachers autonomy to take what we know is good teaching and do it in the classrooms. Then celebrate those things. Give them opportunities to learn more and better, and then celebrate that. I think too often we get bogged down in the minutiae of the management and don't give our teachers the ability to step outside that box and do things differently. So characteristics are risk-taking, growth, that growth mindset. You got to be a little crazy to do what we do. You have to really, really not only love it, but just be willing to do things that maybe nobody's done before and not be embarrassed by it. I don't take myself too seriously at all. I have fun at work every day, and I want my staff to have fun, and I want them to have that joyful attitude, the pirate attitude that Dave Burgess talks about in Teach Like a Pirate, that the passion that's so embedded that you want to make school so amazing for kids every day. And then I want to build that joy into the classroom where teachers aren't afraid. I have classroom assistants who just bring the guitar out and playing on days when right before break, and then the whole hall's empty out from the classrooms, and I have 150 kids out singing songs. That's okay, because you know what they're going to talk about when they go home? They're going to talk about this classroom paraprofessional who they might not have even known his name before, who had the most fun, and it was the best day in school. I want to build that characteristic of understanding and knowing what joy is, and then bringing that to our school and to our classrooms.
So with the fun and with the joy, how do you increase student voice on your campus?
Well, again, we're a pre-K through three school, so you think that student voice isn't really a big deal, but it really, really is. It starts small. I make sure that my kindergarten teachers know that I expect that I want to start hearing more talk from the students than I hear from the teachers. They know that's an expectation I have. I have a couple of teachers that still struggle with that. If you go into any one of my kindergarten classes, starting probably November, December, from morning meeting on, the kids are leading, not the teachers. It starts with that. So they feel part of the classroom. And then when kids come with ideas, as they get a little older, they have ideas for clubs, for activities, for things like that. I listen to them. You know, those are simple things. You know, there's all the other things. You know, we talk about the voice and choice in literacy and giving them opportunities to read what they want to read, talk about books, that present what they've learned in different ways, you know, make those choices and share their voices. You know, using social media has expanded student voice in so many ways. And even at the elementary schools, my students have had a chance to really shine. I had a second grade teacher who took Mystery Skype and she took it off with it. And she's done it now for a couple of years. And last year, a group of educators from Georgia said, you know, we saw you on Twitter. We saw what you're doing with Mystery Skype with your class. You know, we have an in-service day. Is there any way you could Skype in with us and kind of explain it to us? And it was like right in the middle of our school day and we had school. And she's like, well, she goes, I could do that, but I have a classroom of second graders who would love to share this with you. So for 45 minutes, I have second graders teaching these, 15 adults in Georgia, the power of Mystery Skype and what it's doing. So giving those kids, you know, putting them out there and letting them share. When I tweet out a picture or tweet out a thing, the kids want to see it. But more than that, that's their voice, you know, to the public of what's going on. And they can go home and talk about those things. And their parents talk about them too. So I think especially at the elementary level, that's where the student voice comes in. As they get older in intermediate school, middle school, in our district, and high school, they have more say in everything they do, even choosing their classrooms, their classes that they want to take. But I think it starts at the elementaries when we listen to what they say.
Well, that's a very powerful activity for the students to be a part of that in service. So with the social media presence that you have, I've seen a lot of folks come and visit you at your elementary school. Have you always done that or have you just started that process?
I joined Twitter. I say this because it's July when we're taping this. And July 1st, I received my 7-year Twitter anniversary. From July 1st, 2011 to July 9th of 2013, I had 20 followers and I followed 20 people. Those were the people that were at the workshop that I was when I learned about Twitter. In 2013, I was sitting at the National Association of Elementary School Principals in Baltimore, and it was the last day, and I thought, do I drive home early or should I go to this keynote where Todd Whitaker's speaking? And I said, I'll go to his keynote. I didn't even know who Todd Whitaker was. That's how uninvolved I was in education. You know, as far as the PLNs and growing all that, I didn't know. And one of the first things he said was, if you are not on Twitter, you're missing an opportunity at the best personal professional development you can get. And right when he was talking, I took out my phone because I knew I had it. I joined 2 years earlier, took out my phone. I followed Todd Whitaker. Get up in the morning, I go to the gym. And the gym's not always open when I get there because I get there very early. So I wait outside for the doors to open because I want to get in right away. And while I'm sitting there, I start looking through my Twitter and see Todd Whitaker and see what he tweeted or what he retweeted. And I start following some of the people that he was retweeting. And then I start following more. And then I see an article that I'm like, oh, this is perfect for what we're doing. So I take that back. At the time, I was just learning. I take it back, share it with my staff. And then I got hooked. So in 2013, I got hooked on Twitter and didn't know what a PLN was. It took me about a year to figure out what people were talking about that. It took me another 6 months, 8 months to figure out what a hashtag meant. But I have found that Twitter is my tool of choice, obviously. But I use all forms of social media to connect with my families. Building that PLN is such a powerful thing. I can reach out to people all around the world and ask for support, ask for help, look at their ideas, tweet them to make them work in my school. And it's just one big sharing opportunity and learning opportunity. I use social media in so many ways to share the story of my school and all the other things. But as far as building the PLN, and I was at an Ed Camp, leadership Ed Camp today, and that was one of the sessions that I did was talked about building the PLN. Because it is so powerful. I've learned more in the past 5 years on Twitter than I learned through college and high school. And if you want to learn how to be a leader, if you want to learn how to be a teacher, if you want to learn about science, if you want to learn about the presidential campaign, if you want to learn about history, you can find it if you learn how to use the tools correctly.
In addition to Twitter, for those starting their leadership journey, what advice do you have for them?
Don't be afraid to be you. Not everybody's going to be you. That's the hardest thing. I learned that through coaching. It seemed like sometimes I had athletes that weren't as excited about the sport but it's okay. You still show your passion and show who you are. Eventually people will jump on board and take it one step at a time. You're going to have your haters. You're going to have people who are comfortable with being mediocre. And if you want to be great, you have to step out of that and do things differently. And eventually one person will join you, and then the next person will join you, and the next person will join you. And then they'll see the three people down the hall that are doing something a little differently. And they'll say, hey, how can I do that? That's true leadership. That's true growth. You want to build that efficacy of greatness. Again, I want nothing less than that. People who are mediocre are afraid of great. And so they'll try to tear you down. They'll try to stop you and slow you down. You can't let them do that. You have to fight through that. Okay. Again, it's hard, especially when there's a culture that's built, but you have to build that culture of greatness.
So you're the author of Lead with Culture, What Really Matters in Our Schools. And for our listeners that haven't read the book yet, what is it all about and how is it going to help aspiring leaders?
The book is about just what we were just talking about, being a passionate leader who connects with his staff. If you don't have the culture of learning, if you don't have a culture of joy, in each chapter, you know, there's intentionality matters, celebrations matter, community matters, joy matters. All those are different sections where I share a story or two of why I think it's important or what I've done. Also share experiences other people have done to bring the community into school, to bring the passion into school. But that's what my book is about. It's about making school amazing every single day. It's from the Lead Like a Pirate series. So it was the first book in the Lead Like a Pirate book series after Lead Like a Pirate. Beth and Shelley were kind enough to bring me in and make me part of that. I titled it Lead with Culture, What Really Matters in Our Schools, because it's kind of a manifesto, as Dave likes to call it. Dave Burgess likes to call it. You know, it's my manifesto of what I believe is important in schools. So, you know, there are 16 chapters of, you know, what I believe in. They're short chapters, so don't get scared if you're listening. It goes from culture matters, expectations matter, learning and thinking matters, honesty, intentionality. That's a big part of this whole story. What's the purpose? I talk about that constantly with my teachers all the time. Some of my teachers even write it on the board every day, so they have to look at it. It's pasted up on top of their whiteboard. What's the purpose? Because it makes them think, as they're teaching a lesson or as they're handing out something for students to do, why am I really doing this? And I feel like that's one of the big questions that can be answered. If you as a teacher or you as a principal or you as an educator can answer that question, what is the purpose in a positive way that goes towards student learning, then you are doing, you're heading in the right direction. I even talk about that. Sometimes, your purpose might be to have fun, and I'm okay with that too.
Well, it's obvious that you're a passionate, joyful leader, and I kind of want to end with a highlight of the positivity. What do you think is the most joyful thing about being a leader?
I get to be a rock star for hundreds and hundreds of kids each day. Seeing the smiles on their faces, seeing the light bulb go off maybe in a learning moment, making them laugh, making them shout with joy. I cause the most problems in the classrooms of any principal that's ever been there. My teachers, it took them a long time to get used to that. But I walk in, sometimes I might cartwheel in, sometimes I might ride the bike down the hall, sometimes I might have music playing, again, because I want to make school a joyful place. And so I get to be a rock star to 300, 400 kids every single day. I can't imagine anybody not loving this job. I really, really can't. I have the best job in the world.
Jay, how can our listeners connect with you on social media?
Okay, on social media, on Twitter, I am at JAY BILLY2. I guess there must have been a one somewhere along the way. You can find me at JBILLY@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook, Jay Billy on Facebook. Most of the time I tweet and do most of my stuff from my personal accounts because I usually do mostly school stuff. And if I share a family thing, I'm good with that because I think that's so important that people see that we're human and that we have other things going on in our lives too.
You aren't lying. You're very connected with all your social media accounts.
Yes, I got a lot going on. I actually have Instagram too, but I don't use it often except to check on what my kids are doing to make sure they're behaving. But I do see that as a growing thing, especially it's not so much in the elementaries, but with our parents, I think eventually I'm going to have to be a little more connective on Instagram too, just because I want to meet our parents where they are, you know, where they are.
Please continue to check out the Aspire podcast on SoundCloud and iTunes and share your ratings and reviews. Don't forget to use the Aspire Lead hashtag as you continue the conversation on Twitter. Jay, thank you so much for being with us on the program.
Thank you, Josh. It was fun. It was really fun. I love what you do there. I really do. It's awesome.